one of the things I think is huge is that patients really want convenience.
Hi, I'm Patty Murata with HIMSS. In this episode, I'm joined by Jan Oldenburg, founder and principal at Participatory Health Consulting. Today, we'll talk about why patient engagement is essential for effective clinical decision support. Before we start, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Wolters Kluwer Health, bringing you up to date to the premier resource for clinical information and treatment recommendations used by more than 2 million total users worldwide. Visit go.uptodate.com/podcast to learn more. And Jan, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. Well, Jan, you've been a vocal and eloquent advocate for patient engagement for many years. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why this issue is so important to you.
Thank you. I have started referring to myself as a historical artifact of the digital age because I was really in on the beginning of the digital health environment. But, you know, my interest, I come by it naturally. I grew up on stories of my mother pushing the envelope to get a health condition my brother had dealt with, pushing to go to the University of Wisconsin at Madison, then to Mayo, and in the end, really having a significant impact on his life and his health. So there was that in my history. And then I developed a case of non-standard asthma in 1992. And I really saw the difference firsthand between the doctors who collaborated with me, worked with me on my data, tried to figure out what was really going on versus the ones who dismissed me as something of a head case because I actually cared about my data and what was going on and what wasn't standard about it. So in some sense, those experiences were the catalyst that caused me to jump in with both feet when I was offered the opportunity to help patients get access to their health data at Health Partners in Minneapolis in the mid-1990s. And since then, I've worked on digital health initiatives for Kaiser Permanente, for Aetna, both of those as an employee. And then I've done consulting to a wide variety of other organizations, from providers to health plans to medical device companies, always, and a lot of startups too, always focused on this issue of how can we use data, their data, to make life better, simpler, easier for patients.
Right. And I have to say thank you, you know, for all the advocates who came before and, you know, brought us to this point, because I'm sure that we wouldn't be this far along if not for, you know, advocates like you, Jan. So, you know, how does patient engagement help with medication adherence and encourage people to stick with their care plans?
Yeah, I think it has a significant impact. I will say up front, too, that I have begun to think of this subject as personal health engagement more than patient engagement. And the reason for changing that language a little bit is that patient engagement implies that it's something we in the health systems can do to people rather than something that we do with them or that they choose. And I think it's really true that we in the systems can make ourselves engaging. We can offer options. We can build convenience. We can invite them in. But everybody has to make a personal choice about engagement. And that's part of what we're dealing with here is a combination of information and psychology about what helps people take ownership of their own health. And I would say that the tools of getting access to your data, being able to do things like scheduling and asking questions conveniently from your own devices, and also being able to collaborate on getting treatment plans that are designed with your needs and your desires and your values in mind make a significant difference. We know that people who are engaged in their own health ask more questions. They are more likely to find errors in their medical record, especially when they have access to their data, including open notes. They can push follow-ups that might have been missed by their doctors or the health system. Again, as I said, they're more likely to stick with treatment plans that they help create because those treatment plans are more likely to be sensitive to their lifestyle and their values. And we also know, honestly, that they have higher satisfaction. And I think a lot of health systems are kind of afraid of engaged patients because they worry that they'll be complaining about everything. But in fact, the opposite is true, and there's data to show it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're engaged, if you're part of it, then you have a say, you know, you have a voice at the table. I love what you said about personal health versus, you know, patient health and, you know, personal choices and having that agency. You know, health systems have been innovating their approaches to patient engagement and experiences for more than a decade now. So in your opinion, how is the U.S. health system doing, generally speaking, on the patient engagement front?
So on the one hand, I am thrilled that most systems have adopted portals and other digital tools, and they're really working on moving this forward. And in fact, the latest data from ONC published this year says that as of 2022, 3 out of 4 consumers were actually offered online access to their medical records. And well over 1/2, I think 57%, actually accessed their record, including a sizable minority that went on their record at least 6 times or more during the year. And that usage grew by 50% in the 2 years from 2020 to 2022. So that's great news. And it makes, you know, those of us who have been working in this space feel validated. But there's still a lot more we could and should be doing. You know, one of the things I think is huge is that patients really want convenience. They have experienced convenience digitally with their banks, with newspapers and news outlets, with shopping. They know what it's like to have a convenient experience. And they still look at the healthcare system and say, hey, why can't you do what happens every day in the rest of my life? So convenience is a big measure. Lots of people still aren't offering self-scheduling, or if they do, they don't offer the ability to reschedule. And those are key things that people want, have been saying they want, and we're still gradually and sort of reluctantly providing. I also think we could be doing much more with just-in-time education when people are using the portal. So one of the things we know is that people are more likely to use the portal if their doctors ask them to and encourage them to do it. But secondly, when they get on there, in way too many systems, we give them access to their test results, but we don't provide a quick link to explain them. So we leave them to go off to Dr. Google and search, where they may or may not find credible information. Same thing when they're newly diagnosed with a condition. We don't provide just-in-time education as they're looking at it. And yet we know that that's often the spur to action, is that information can spur action if you have the relevant knowledge about what works. So that's a huge thing that we should be doing much more of. And then, you know, people carry around digital data collection tools in the form of their cell phones, right? They are often also specifically tracking their exercise, their diet, their weight, other aspects of their health. And yet we're not asking for that. I just led a white paper on patient-contributed data for HL7. And I can tell you that we don't have standards around this data and we don't have means of incorporating it. And that's something, it doesn't have to be a big organizational initiative. Every doctor can be asking about that. Every doctor can be incorporating it. And it can really encourage people in taking that ownership for their health.
I loved everything you said about, you know, from the portals to, you know, smartphones, making sure that we really, all of those things that are out there that we take, you know, take advantage of and making sure. I just recently had, you know, a blood test done and, you know, I accessed my portal because, you know, it said your test is on there. And I looked through and it was very detailed, but I remembered looking like, okay, everything's normal. But, you know, I had a bunch of questions like, okay, what does this mean though? What does that mean? You know, so to your point, having that just in time education, you know, would be really helpful. So, you know, how can health systems tailor their approaches to different patients who may not be tech savvy? You know, they may lack health literacy, may be affected by language barriers, or, you know, may still use flip phones. So how can we reach those patients?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of strategies. And if I don't mention it, remind me to talk about the bigger issue of personalization of responses, because this is a small dimension of it, right? That ask me what my preferred method of communication is. And if it's the phone, use the phone. For flip phones, there are lots of programs that are used extensively in developing countries that we use very little here to do text messaging-based education, text messaging-based information. There was a program called Text for Baby in the U.S. that had a huge impact, probably around 2010 or so, on educating young mothers in underserved populations about what to do during pregnancy, what was important, how to take care of their baby, what mattered around immunizations. And we could be using those strategies for many other conditions if we were being sensitive to what are the devices and technologies and capabilities of an individual. We also know that people learn in different ways. So in order to meet those different learning styles, when we do have education online, we should be doing not just text-based, but illustrations with pictures. We should be doing videos. We should be giving people the opportunity to interact with us in ways that really fit who they are, the technology they have, and their place in life. And I think one of those things is also making it much easier to have proxies access on my behalf. So, you know, I may have an aged parent. My mother was using her portal till she was 94, but many older people are not. And so allow the children, make it easy for them to get on and help interpret, schedule, ask questions, et cetera.
What are some important things to keep in mind about how patient-generated health data can and should be handled by clinicians in standards and for research?
Yeah, obviously it's a topic near and dear to my heart, but you know, I think about how many places we're collecting data. And you know, I'll think about all the apps. I don't know about you, but yes, my Apple Watch helps me with my exercise, my standing. I track my diet in another app. And one of the things that I notice is that hardly any of them give me any feedback. Feed all this data in, and I get nothing back. I get no personalized insights. I get no information about how I fit a pattern and how other people that fit that pattern have been successful, or that might inform my actions going forward, or nudges that are personalized rather than just sort of blanket nagging me. Those are the kinds of things that we can learn from the data that people collect on our behalf if we ask them, but maybe collecting and willing to share. And if we were asking about that, that's the kind of data that can really inform not only information about what really happens to people between the visits to the formal doctor's office or hospital, but it also can allow us to really think through how we can help people, what kinds of nudges work, what interventions work, how we can personalize those interactions. Now, of course, none of that data is currently protected. It's not covered under HIPAA until and unless it actually enters the doctor's office. So we should also be thinking about privacy. We should be advocating for standards and regulations that protect some of that data on behalf of people. And when we are using it with them, we need to be careful that we are honoring their privacy and only sharing what they're willing to share. But I do think it offers this huge hope for collaboration between patients and their clinicians, between clinicians and researchers, and even between patients and researchers.
Yeah. I love what you said about getting feedback, because you're right. You give all this information, you upload it, and, you know, personalized insights would be great. I mean, is there, and I think part of that would be that the clinicians also have to be educated as well. You know, they get all this information and, you know, it's kind of an art and science. What do you do with that information? You know, it's great to have that, but hopefully there's an education component where they can see something and, you know, help that patient. But I love that idea of, you know, this feedback. And so it's kind of a loop to get that going. And also, I feel like, you know, it's going to build trust between the patient and the clinician.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, doctors don't want to see daily readings about anything. But if it's trended, if they see the exceptions, if they can then talk to their patients about which data helps them and which data doesn't, then again, you have more fuel for collaboration and the data becomes a living thing.
Right. And that also speaks to, you know, how does patient engagement enable better clinical decision support? So, you know, that's a perfect example of that. I mean, do you see that out there anywhere?
In small bits and pieces, you know, and I think one of the things that, you know, like we're seeing a lot more patients directly engaged in research and the planning and in even the running of research, it's been a huge point of pride for PCORI to advance that. So we're seeing some of it there. We are also starting to see studies on, you know, home use of blood pressure cuffs, for example. And we actually find the research so far shows us that that data is actually about as accurate as collected in the office, that it trends very well with it. So that can improve the confidence of both the patients and the providers that this is worthwhile and should be continued.
That's great. So, Jen, is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to emphasize or any closing thoughts?
I think one of the things is that if you want to improve patient engagement in your community, if you want more engaged patients and more engaged families, you need to be engaging. And that means really looking top to toe at the policies that you have introduced, making sure you don't have conflicts where you're asking for engagement on the one hand and putting barriers in place on the other. Look at access. Look at the flow of things from phone to digital to in-person and make sure that there actually is a flow between all of those sources. Think about how you come off in every interaction from digital to in-person. And that, you know, honestly includes things that are way out of the scope of digital, like your parking policies, but they're part of how you're welcoming people in and making them feel important to you. Make sure you're integrating all of those policies across all of those levels. And since I'm here, I'll put in a plug for a couple of books that I published under HIMSS umbrella or been a part of publishing under the HIMSS umbrella, because they have more information about these topics.
Great. And, you know, I think to your point about being welcoming, because a lot of times going into a healthcare facility can be a little nerve-wracking and scary, and to have that sort of welcome mat and all aspects is really important. Well, Jen, thank you so much for joining us today and for your insights.
Truly my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Wolters Kluwer Health, bringing you up to date, the premier resource for clinical information and treatment recommendations used by more than 2 million total users worldwide. Visit go.uptodate.com/podcast to learn more. And everyone have a fantastic rest of your day.